Welcome to Truth to Tell. I'm Andy Driscoll. Well, today we hope to speak to geeks and Luddites alike as we explore the interconnected future of the Twin Cities. How do we breach the digital divide, providing internet access to all citizens of the digital age, no matter their income or other status? Which of the several technologies planned and being used now can best serve the public interest at a reasonable cost? How to prepare for a future of global connections for government, business, and personal communications and data transmission? Sound complicated? It is indeed, but we'll try to keep it simple so you can help your cities decide how this should be done.
Truth to Tell. I'm Linnell Michaels. For the last couple of years, Minneapolis has, under a public-private partnership with U.S. Internet Wireless, been building what is known as a ubiquitous or all-encompassing citywide network of wireless nodes, radios, which are radios mounted on poles and lamps, to bring the internet to anyone who can pick up the signal with their wireless receivers in their computers, and who subscribes, I must add. Most laptops are equipped with cards and wireless capability, so people on the move, sitting in coffee shops or offices, cars, and trucks can hook up to this network. This includes police squads, building inspectors, water meter readers, as well as the rest of us.
The Minneapolis system seems to be working fairly well for many, very well for some, and maddeningly poor for others, as you may have read in this morning's strip. A few calls have gone out to cancel the city's contract with U.S. Internet, but the system is a bit short from completion, so the calls may be premature. They've run out of poles on which to hang their transmitters, according to one of our guests this morning. And Minneapolis seems to have set the sort of business model needed to sustain the system by agreeing to be the anchor tenant and guaranteeing the purchase of a minimum number of uses and applications and services from USI, thus allowing the rest of the city to access the internet without losing its vendor, as so many other cities have. Philadelphia found itself bereft of its partner when Earthlink simply withdrew its services after losing money and its CEO to cancer. Earthlink has done the same in several markets as well.
But is this wireless system the best way to build what is called a broadband network, which it would ensure high-speed, reliable connections for all of those seeking connections to business, government, public safety agencies, and each other? St. Paul thinks no. The city's broadband study committee faced off pressure to make wireless available by the time it hosts the RNC and decided that instead they would hold off and look for a more thorough report on alternatives that they could use. And when they did, they strongly recommended a core structure of fiber optic cables that could be the superstructure for a wireless system.
Frustrated techies studying and working on this issue cite the failures of the squabbling and grasping United States cable, telco, and wireless corporations, whose influence on Federal Communications Commission, on the FCC, has led to policies they say have slowed our maturity in broadband development, placing us far behind the rapidly deploying technologies in Europe and Japan, whose systems are 3 and 4 times faster and more reliable. How are you holding up out there? It's tough, because as we all know, thousands of us and our friends still have trouble starting up a computer and are completely weirded out by all those screen-lit faces in the coffee shops where we read our morning papers.
Hey, that's me, Andy. Wait.
Is that you?
That's me.
Sorry, Linnell. Well, we'll try to soften the blow. Well, still, this techie age is not for the Luddites of the world. It's for globalizing our local world. We all know that we have to ask our kids and grandkids to help us make us computer literate enough to send an email, and even then many get lost in the bits and bytes swirling before our eyes.
So let's attempt then to bring some sanity to this discussion with our three guests who have come to our studio not to bury us but enlighten us about the options and try to make sense of why to choose one system over the other and the pluses and minuses of public ownership versus private control over this public utility known as broadband. And we want your thoughts and ideas and stories about encounters with broadband technology and how to connect yourself. Call us at 612-341-3333. 0980-612-341-0980.
Christopher Mitchell comes to us from the Institute on Local Self-Reliance and its New Rules Project, where he has authored a policy brief titled Municipal Broadband, Demystifying Wireless and Fiber Optic Options, which we sincerely hope he will do for us today. The Institute supports publicly owned networks and St. Paul's approach to fiber cable infrastructure. Chris, welcome.
Thank you.
We also have Eric Lamplin, who is a network architect for Lookout Point Communications. Eric and his company has been working to help cities develop their municipal commons, places where everyone is networked and welcome to connect, including adding public information and other content to these networks for public consumption, like I assume local cable shows, broadcasting school plays, et cetera, et cetera.
Yes.
Thank you.
And Peter Fleck is with us as well. He's technology and web coordinator for the University of Minnesota Extension Center for Family Development and a member of the Digital Inclusion Coalition, which drafted the original community benefits agreement, which served as the basis for community benefits in the final contract for the wireless network deployment in the city of Minneapolis. He's also a member of the Digital Inclusion Fund Advisory Committee. We'll get all of these things straight and what they do, which is overseeing and funding digital inclusion proposals in Minneapolis. Peter, welcome.
Thank you.
And let's begin by explaining how Minneapolis went about deciding on this wireless approach and why it doesn't simply own the wireless network as a municipal utility.
All right. First, thanks for having me here today, Andy. And I'll make one slight correction in my introduction. I moved on, transferred from Extension, and still working at the university, but no longer with University of Minnesota Extension.
Change your website resume, please.
No. That takes a little time.
He's too busy building the network. Right.
Trying to get digital inclusion for get everyone on the network in the city. So Minneapolis did debate the idea of public ownership versus private ownership back in late 2005 and early 2006, which is when I got very interested in what was going on via the Institute for Local Self-Reliance and some of the white papers that they were putting out and some of the local community newspapers. And I was very much in favor of public ownership. I lobbied council members, but it was sort of a done deal that they wanted to stay with a private vendor to take, basically kind of to take the hit in a sense and not have to manage the network themselves. They were not sure how much it would cost them to manage a network like this. So they decided to go with a private vendor and chose over the course of that year. They put out an RFP,
RFP again?
Request for proposal.
Mm-hmm. We're going to have to explain a lot
acronyms.
Of terms today.
Okay.
Yeah.
A request for proposal. Various things happened. I won't go into detail on all those, but it ended up in the summer of 2006 with two finalists, U.S. Internet and Earthlink. Both finalists built a pilot project. Some of the first antennas went up outside my second floor window, and I got to know the people putting them in and was on the wireless network very early. So I was able to test it and see what was going on and stuff and start following through on the deployment of the wireless in the city and going to the meetings and the community meetings and getting more and more involved in it from a citizen activist point. I was never paid. My PF Hyper blog, pfhyper.com, my PF Hyper blog, I reported on on what was going on with the wireless deployment around the city of Minneapolis.
And what was?
It took way longer than they expected. Part of that was it took longer to get the contract signed, so they were not able to start or do very much in the fall of 2006, and they had to wait till spring to really get going on the network. And it's been much slower than they expected. Part of that was, as you mentioned, Andy, is finding they have to have a pole in the right place to make this mesh work. And if there's not a pole there, then you're going to have what's called now a challenge area.
You call it a mesh?
Yes, a wireless mesh where the signals are, it's like think of it like a web.
Transmitter, isn't it?
There's transmitters.
Sort of broadcasts or receives as though it were a broadcast.
It does both.
Yeah, right.
So it's receiving and transmitting messages.
Like a modem.
They're all talking to each other.
Yes.
So if one transmitter goes down, the plan is that other transmitters would take its place and that the signal wouldn't just drop out. You wouldn't lose like a whole neighborhood because one transmitter went down. That's the plan, the deeper plan of a wireless mesh network. And in Minneapolis, they want ubiquitous coverage. They want 100% coverage, close to that, across the city.
Eric is grinning over here.
Yeah.
What are you grinning about, Eric?
No, actually, nothing, Andy.
Okay, go ahead.
Listening to Peter.
Okay.
Yeah, and you guys, I'm on the technical side, I'm probably not as deep as Eric is. So if there's stuff I'm sort of not explaining correctly, that's great.
Well,
if you want to
I'll jump in. Should we feel just very grateful that U.S. Internet got the contract since Philadelphia went with Earthlink, and their problems have been kind of, you know, a cautionary tale. The company dropped them. Wasn't that basically what happened?
It was a business model, wasn't it?
It was a business model.
Yeah, it was a bit. Well, you know, this gets into the deep back channels of
the
corporate world, which we won't go to.
Well, but not the corporate world, but we have a public utility here. One of the things that I think everybody is concerned about is whether or not this ought to be actually owned, this whole system of transmitters and the wireless network itself should be sort of owned by the city, the municipality that's funding it and supplying the services.
I mean, the context I've heard it in is like, let's say we're building roads. Do you let General Motors build your road? Do you limit it to one vendor, or do you build a road that anyone can drive
there's
on?
Some of that.
And then the idea is that, you know, that at this point, broadband technology is as key to living in anywhere, and especially in a city, as electricity, a road. It's part of the infrastructure. And so the question is, who should own it, right?
Absolutely.
This is Christopher Mitchell.
I think that's a very good question. And the answer is that the communities that relied upon Earthlink and MetroFi to build their networks and own them and do all the work are being left behind now. And so we were lucky that we did not go with Earthlink. It was a wise decision. However, yeah. I believe
did
there
they
was
apply?
A still...
Were they part of it?
They were the finalists.
Earthlink
Well, they
was
were
a
among
finalist.
The finalists.
Yeah,
I
we're
see.
Very okay. lucky not to be with Earthlink.
If I missed but that, I apologize.
At the same time, there's a number of us who believe there was a still wiser decision to be made, and we did not go that way. We chose to have U.S. Internet own and build it, and the city would be an anchor tenant on it, giving them money for 10 years under contract.
So, Eric, what's the problem with that? Hey, I'll play devil's advocate. U.S. Internet, they built it. It was their money, right? They took the risk. So what's the downside?
Well, the downside is for an information network under the regulatory environment, a city has very little power to make sure that that network operates in the public interest. State laws, national laws pretty much give the network owner very wide power to do whatever they want with their network.
And so give me an example of a possible problem.
So one example that we have not seen locally is, I want to make that clear that I'm not accusing them of doing this at this point, but some companies will have in the past prevented consumers from using certain applications. So if I want to use my internet connection to use a free phone service rather than paying my internet provider for that phone.
Like Skype?
Like Skype, for instance. In the past, some companies have prohibited me from doing that. And that is something that it's still not worked out what power a private network owner has over telling you what you can do with your internet connection. So that is one danger.
Yeah. And can I jump in just for
All right.
a second?
Yeah, go ahead.
I don't want to, or at this table anyway, I'm certainly not a proponent that Wi-Fi is the end-all and be-all of a citywide internet system. I don't think at this table anyway, and a lot of other people, even in the city, down at City Hall, that we know that fiber has to get to the home. I mean, there's no question about that. Wi-Fi is great. We need Wi-Fi for mobility, and it's great to have the Wi-Fi system installed, but it's not fast enough to sustain telephone and television and serious internet. And by
in
serious,
other words, the signals over the air can't,
yes.
at this juncture, cannot simply go as fast as a hard piece of wire.
Oh,
and now fiber optics fibers in the cable instead of copper and other materials
right.
are much faster, much more,
right.
much broader in what they call the bandwidth. Of delivering these signals that gives us the speed and the wideness of, like, television signals that have to be much wider than, let's say, radio signals or I'm just trying to get
the
audience.
Is that about right? So like if we want to download a movie on the internet or start renting movies on the internet, that's where you want a much faster system?
Perhaps I can give you some.
Yes.
Yeah, here's Eric Lampley. Yeah.
I can give you some arbitrary numbers, and they're arbitrary in the sense that we call them bits per second, and most people don't have any idea what bits per second is. So
they confuse them with bytes.
Well,
don't they?
There are
the more the better.
There are okay. 8 bits in a byte. That's
okay.
You can wander yourself into those terms for a long time, yeah. But simply looking at them in terms of numbers that are orders of magnitude different. A typical connection today in your standard DSL world is someplace between 1 and 7 megabits per second. A typical cable connection may be someplace between 2 and 12 megabits per second. There are faster versions of both of those technologies available, but they're only incrementally faster. Wi-Fi typically is in the area of 1 to about 5 megabits per second. And again, there are more faster versions of wireless coming out. But when you step into the arena of fiber, it's not atypical to be talking about 50, 100, or 1,000 megabits per second. So
that's
in terms
very
of,
fast and very broad.
Yeah. So yep. In terms of order of magnitude, fiber is just a lot faster.
So, Eric, you're saying, and what other people are saying, is that fiber, and you look at the future, fiber is the future. But does that mean that in order to have that, say, in St. Paul, the city has to dig? Yeah, has basically dig up the streets and connect us house by house, kind of like a cable company?
Well, that's certainly one approach. You can put it in the ground. You can actually put it on telephone poles. And those are the same methods that you currently use to deliver DSL phone company copper wire or coaxial cable from a cable company. That's all the same method.
So can I point out an additional method?
Yes, please.
That I've just heard about is in some rural areas. People have this perspective of fiber being very fragile. And when they use it in aerial deployments, it's very strong. It's much stronger than other wires. And in Vermont, in one area, they're going to be running a fiber cable through trees to get to a house that's not even electrified. They run off a generator, but they're going to put a fiber connection to it.
So that's Christopher Mitchell of the Institute for Local Self-Reliance. We have Peter Fleck with us, who's been working with the Minneapolis Wi-Fi thing, and Eric Lampland, who is a longtime consultant in the business of networking. We have a call from Glenn in Washington, D.C. Glenn?
Yes. Good morning. I am calling in. I do international deployment to broadband. And I just wanted to point out the difference of what I'm doing is I go into a country based on U.S. aid, Agency for International Development requirements. But we go in at a national level working with the top level and explaining to them what the advantage of doing this type of work is, the deployment of broadband, and the advantage it will bring to that country. And I think what's missing in the U.S. is the alignment of business development possibilities, particularly in rural areas. And in a country like Macedonia, Montenegro, Senegal, we're using wireless deployment, wireless backbone. We're not even getting to the fiber level. We're providing a solution which is better than what they have now, and deploying wireless to places that are so rural, by U.S. standards, it's unbelievable. But, the goal is to increase economic development in that country. And I believe the same goal should be applied when considering broadband deployment in the U.S.
Thank you very much, Glenn.
Thanks, Glenn. Maybe USAID actually apply this to it on a national scale. That would be kind of nice if they would do
USAID should be like CIA. Come back home.
Right. I have a question for all of you, though. So if this is the future, is the main question then who's going to fund the infrastructure, who's going to actually pony up the money to first string these things, and whether it's private versus public. And anyway, I want to talk about that.
Chris Mitchell.
Absolutely. There's one company that's doing it, Verizon, a major company, I should say, that's doing it. And they're responsible for most fiber connections in the United States. But more importantly, from my perspective, is the 40 to 50 communities that have already started doing this. And locally, Monticello has just started on this project. Windham, way out in southwest Minnesota, has been a fiber community for a long time. And there's folks up on the Iron Range who are considering it, may very well have far better connections than we have in St. Paul and Minneapolis, because they understand the power of it, and they're going to do it themselves because they recognize
the power of fiber optics.
Fiber optics, and they recognize that no private company is going to come up there and build out in a rural area in the way that they can do it themselves to make sure that they have the best network possible.
Eric, you've been working with a lot of cities outstate as well, haven't you?
Yes, and Chris has mentioned a lot of the very early people who have gotten into the fiber activity. There are about 50 cities in and around the Twin Cities area that I work with today who are looking closely at this question. There are other private builds in southeastern Minnesota with Hiawatha Broadband, and a city that I work with is Red Wing right now, is considering this particular development. So the activity is very high. A lot of it, going back to Glenn's question when he called in, is actually motivated by economic development. A city that does not have an appropriate infrastructure in terms of communications today is no different than a city that does not have highways going to it in 1950. Telephone systems. It's
right.
Analogous in very many ways. And this public-private conversation has been had in the United States about electricity, about sewer systems, about railroads,
water.
And
to this very day, we have sort of a hybrid across the country of municipally owned systems, privately owned systems, many of them monopolies, regulated monopolies. So this is, in fact, a utility, isn't it?
It is, in fact, a utility, and it is, in fact, going to be different depending upon the conditions of a local community. So in some cases, they're served very, very well by the private sector. In other cases, they need to plunge ahead and do it themselves.
Is this in part what needs to be done because we simply we're not exercising the right of the public because of our rights of way and because the trunks are there and we're helping to fund it? We're just not getting the return on our investment sufficiently from some private entities to make it truly a public system, Christopher?
I think it goes a little bit deeper than that. I think that in the past, we've recognized that to be a strong country, we need to expect our governments to maximize social benefit, and we need to expect private companies to maximize profit for their shareholders. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that system. But now we're looking at a situation where we're trying to get private companies to maximize social good and government to make a profit. And that is a very poor model. And so what we need to do is we need to run this like a utility. We need to have the city build it so that they can manage it, make sure that a single company isn't making decisions that will hurt the community. And then we can have a number of different competitors on that network. And this is something we're going to get to, I know, today, is the idea of an open network. So you have many different competitors. You don't just choose between one cable company and a phone company, but maybe three service providers of this or 10 of that.
Well, now let's Peter, come in and talk about this and get close to the mic, please.
Yes. I wanted to just a little bit in response
to what
Chris is saying.
We have another call coming in.
About the maximizing the private companies want to maximize profits, et cetera. One way that Minneapolis did respond to this, which is working very well, is the community benefits agreement. So after in part of the contract negotiations, they sat down with U.S. Internet and said, we want to – and actually I think they were sitting with both U.S. Internet and Earthlink at one point, and they were sort of saying who can give us the best benefits. So that was part of how they judged who to choose to build the network in this city. So in Minneapolis we have – and I was also part early on of a draft of the original community benefit agreement in what was the Digital Inclusion Roundtable in 2006 that we put together, the first draft of this agreement. Okay. Now, those were just recommendations.
What did they recommend and what held? What stayed in the agreement?
Well, for instance, we wanted symmetrical upload-download speeds so that if you get 3 megabits per second of bringing stuff to your computer, so when you want to watch maybe a streaming television show, if you want to upload your own video, you're going to get that same 3 megabits, so it uploads very fast.
Yes, well,
that,
right now I
that
have
didn't happen. Let's
just, a lot of people are like me.
Right.
I have cable access to my internet.
Right.
I get something like between 6 and 10 fast speeds down, megabits, but only about a megabit going up.
If you're lucky.
Less. If I'm lucky. It's down around 796, I think.
Yeah.
Well, that's our kilobits.
Yes.
So, now all these bits are going to confuse people again, but we're talking about and this is something that has bothered me all along, that apparently it's been by design that individuals and even companies have not been able to upload things off their systems onto the net anywhere near as fast as the downloads. I think Chris talks about this in his report.
And I learned about it from Eric.
And he got it from Eric. We've got them all here, folks. We've got them all, the biggies.
With respect to these speed differences, the uploads and the download speeds, for most business connections today, symmetrical speeds are normal. Here in Minneapolis, if I were to go to one of the service providers, I would order a particular circuit that would be equal in both directions. However, in the residential community, the applications that service providers were believing that residents would use did have an asynchronous nature to them. You make a request for a particular web page, and that request is relatively small. But the web page on return, when it comes to you, provides, you know, very large requirements for data. So in the historical sense, what they provided to residences was reasonable with respect to the applications of those days. But we're passing by that. The applications that are currently coming forward on the network are ones in which we share large volumes of information between residences. And this is where this issue of upload speeds comes into play. And so there is a great deal of motivation to move in the direction that businesses have always received, and that is the symmetrical nature of it.
And can I add something to that, which is for a community radio station like this, I think we should be very sensitive to the power of democratizing media. It's something that I think probably everyone listening to this show wants to see. And having a symmetrical connection that allows you to upload very fast is key to that. Now more than almost any other time, is we have more power to create our own media and to create our TV shows or more likely audio. Mm-hmm. And that competes with someone like Comcast, which owns many media producing properties.
There you go. That's what it's sort of like the individual is now becoming a competitor to the big cable companies out there. And let's get back to this community benefits thing in just 1 minute. I want to come back to the community benefits thing. We have a phone call waiting, but we have to take a break right now. We are speaking with Eric Lempland, Lookout, is it?
Lookout Point Communications.
I've known this guy for 30 years and I didn't know the name of his company.
And we're also talking to Christopher Mitchell, Director of Telecommunications at the Commons Initiative, and Peter Fleck, member of the Minneapolis Digital Inclusion Fund, and a few other things.
612-341-0980, 612-341-0980, here on Truth to Tell from KFAI, Minneapolis-St. Paul. We'll be back in a minute. Hey, hello, welcome back to Truth to Tell. I'm Andy Driscoll. We're positioning our friends in front of microphones. Believe me, not everybody in the wireless world knows how to sit in front of a microphone. Okay, and so I'm Andy Driscoll.
I'm Lynnell Michelson,
and we've been talking with Eric Lempland, Peter Fleck, and Christopher Mitchell about Wi-Fi, that is that mobile wide fidelity, I think is where it came from, the mobile or the wireless fidelity, I guess it is. It gives us through the air waves so that you can take your laptops into coffee shops versus not necessarily versus, but in conjunction with maybe a hardwired cable system, now in the future probably made of fiber, which is very, very fast and very broad and much better, maybe even for the environment, I don't know. But we're talking about that. Right now we have a phone call from Richard in Maplewood. Richard?
Andy, this is Richard Lee, the sheriff, who spent hours and hours with you at the National Conference for Media Reform.
Thank you, Lee, for calling. How are you?
Oh, I'm just recovering. Thank you.
Yeah, we're all. I almost didn't make it today. All right, go ahead.
Well, there were several sessions that I attended, and many of the speakers in other sessions stressed how important it is not only for social justice in our society, but for economic competitiveness, both between states and between countries, broadband is. And we were alarmed to hear that, for example, since 2005, the United States has dropped from 5th to 14th in overall broadband capacity and speed, which is outrageous while we're spending trillions of dollars around the world in military adventures. Fortunately, our Minnesota legislature has glommed onto this issue. This past session, a bill was passed to provide a planning policy director and an advisory committee to build out the entire state in broadband, and another bill was passed to provide for a mapping activity to facilitate that. And then in February of this year, thanks to the Minnesota legislature, all of the state's public television stations are now connected by high-speed fiber optic cable so that they can exchange broadcast all over the state. So this program is vitally important. Thank you very much for doing it.
Well, Lee, thank you very much for that additional information. And Christopher, I know you're a policy guy, so
yes.
and I know Eric is probably working with some of this stuff as well statewide. Let's talk a little bit about that connection. I do want to get back to our community benefits agreement for the local area particularly, but maybe you're striking some CBAs down in Red Wing and other
CBAs.
Places. CBAs, community benefits agreements, yeah. And we've already had one show about CBAs here for different things like transportation and other things that have an effect on the community where there's an agreement with the community to with developers especially, and then the city sort of intrudes as a third party there. So go ahead, Christopher.
Well,
Mitchell.
The state has taken an interest in this arena. And I don't want to be too pessimistic about it. However, we've seen very few states do anything very positive in terms of really solving this problem.
All right.
And if I can start at the national level, we've seen no real movement towards solving this problem under the Bush administration in terms of really building out a communications infrastructure that we need. States have mostly ignored it, and when they've acted, they've really acted in the interests of existing phone and cable companies.
Mm.
And I really hope that's not the direction that we head down, although in some ways it seems as though this task force that the governor will be using may be stacked with those sort of interests. So this is why communities really need to take it upon themselves to make sure that they are looking out for their own interests, to make sure that they build the network that they need. We shouldn't have a private company choosing which communities get the infrastructure of the 21st century or deciding if they get it 10 years later than their neighbors or something along to that effect.
Christopher, is this sort of like saying we need better voting machines and then we have one vendor come in and say, this is the voting machine? Is it sort of like
yeah.
that?
Well, I have a fear that, as many other states have done, Minnesota will decide that the solution is to build out these DSL networks, which are asymmetrical. They're slower, and they won't be built for 3 to 5 years at a minimum. And so,
it's already obsolete technology.
That's exactly my point. And it's in the interest of a profit maximizing corporation to offer those connections, but it's not in the interest of a community.
And I was asking Peter during the break, does that mean that we in Minneapolis who have this U.S. internet system, I believe it is mostly DSL based, is it not?
It's Wi-Fi. It's a Wi-Fi. Wireless system. It has no interface with the DSL system that basically Qwest handles in the Twin Cities area. So this is completely done
with
radio waves that come either directly to your computer Or you can get a device in your home which brings in the signal, and then you can use a wired connection in your home to connect multiple computers within your home.
But that's only in Minneapolis, isn't it?
Yes, this is only in Minneapolis.
Only in Minneapolis. But we're talking now about a sort of a statewide network.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, but I was saying, is that still a limited bandwidth? Are we talking, Wi-Fi? So is this ultimate solution back again doing a statewide fiber optic? Or at least within cities?
We're going to need fiber. I mean, in my opinion, that we have to get to fiber. And there's talks in Minneapolis now with, like, for example, with new construction requiring that they run conduit in for fiber, even though it's not ready to go yet, to start doing this. Or if you tear up a street, let's start laying fiber, laying the conduit to put the fiber in for the city's system. And they are discussing this at City Hall.
Eric, you look like you're bursting to say a little something. Are you talking about... the same issues are confronting you in smaller towns like Red Wing.
I think the issue that Christopher was addressing is the correct one. We need to move to fiber networks, and we need to move to fiber networks fairly rapidly. This is not something that the rest of the world is waiting for us to do. They're proceeding, and they're doing so not only in the sense of speed and the new applications that will come across fiber, but in terms of cost reduction. It is normal for the networks in Europe and Asia to be substantially cheaper than those here in the United States.
I couldn't believe it. 27 cents per megabyte uploads of 150 megabits
in
not
Japan.
Megabytes, megabits in Japan.
Yeah.
27 cents where it's something like $3, something like that here?
Well, the numbers will vary depending upon the studies that you actually look at. Without a doubt, we can say that in the United States we pay substantially more. For example, in France, you can receive what we recall a triple play, your voice services, your telephone services, your TV services. It's a minor TV service. And your internet service at a higher rate of speed than we were at all used to here. And that cost is about $45 a month. For the entire package.
One of the things that occurs to me right now is to tell the audience that if they've ever seen a video on their computer and it's sort of halting, okay, that means the bandwidth is too narrow. It's to carry the signal the way you would watch it on a television set, so that it jerks and stuff because it's a compressed signal that is being shoved down a smaller pipe, as it were.
So when that happens, is that the problem with my modem? Is that the problem with my ISP? Is that the problem with
all
since I have DSL?
I think
Quest?
The whole thing. It's okay. The whole. It's technology, and it's the way the thing is transmitted. Christopher,
I wanted to say that it's true that we have many of these problems for those of us that have connections, but there's also an issue in communities with connecting people who are not connected, and it's an issue that we've wrestled with, and it's something that there's no one solution. There's no two solutions. There's many interlapping problems that need to be solved. But I believe that community ownership of the network is really a key step in that direction. A community benefits agreement is definitely a good thing for a community to have. But nonetheless, you're still arguing perhaps with a private company on where to share some profits.
Yeah, it's the profit business, isn't it?
But when we run this as a utility, we build streets. We don't expect them to pay for themselves. We build a fiber system, and it's going to offer a better payback. And we can use a lot of that money to really fund programs and try and deal with this digital divide.
Yeah, so this digital divide thing, this business of not everybody is able to even get a signal. I know, as I understand it, they lined up at libraries. Young people, people of color in particular, are finding themselves bereft. Peter, talk about this community benefits thing, and let's again talk about access. How do we make this available to everyone?
The city of Minneapolis, part of the reason they went with the Wi-Fi wireless connection with U.S. Internet is to address the digital inclusion problem, which is sort of the term now they use instead of digital divide, although they all mean the same thing. It's getting access for everyone.
Well, it just turns it from a negative to a positive.
Right. That sort of philosophy.
Okay.
So the city saw and along with lobbying from many of the community organizations, saw the wireless implementation and deployment as the quickest way to address digital inclusion, because they could bring in a private vendor, they could lay this thing out as a wireless network rather than have, you know, like it's going to take St. Paul a while to get fiber in. And they wanted to try to get people online as quickly as possible.
I see. Well, of course, that would be speedier to have wireless, but not
right.
but not as
yes.
superstructured as broadband
right.
fiber. Okay, go ahead.
And so in the process of that, they also went in with U.S. Internet and devised the Community Benefits Agreement, which provides various benefits to help with digital inclusion. U.S. Internet is providing $500,000 that will then be granted out to projects that nonprofits can and this is the group I'm with. Nonprofits can propose ideas of how they want to do digital inclusion via their nonprofit and apply for the money. We've given out $200,000 so far in the past year.
From the Digital Inclusion Fund?
Fund, yes. Okay. Digital Inclusion Fund Advisory
Which US
Committee.
Which U.S. Internet contributed the $500,000
Well,
so far
we have $300,000 that we've given out, or $200,000 that we've given out. The next $300,000 payment is forthcoming. Originally, it was when the city signed off on the network, and that's probably how it's going to be. But we've heard that we'll have the money in 30 to 60 days, I think.
Now, these are nonprofit organizations you're giving the money to. Is that correct? Is
yes,
that
they
said?
Apply for it, and there were 100 or so applications, and we gave out maybe, I should know these numbers, but 20 or 30 maybe at the most.
Now, what happens with individual households that don't have access to this network?
Well, there's no direct solutions for that yet. We did give some money to a group that's going to refurbish hardware and give it out, but there are no cheap accounts directly to the households. Part of the philosophy here is to support the community technology centers where people can go to get access to the internet at this point. But the price point on the U.S. internet system, the base price point is $19.95 a month for about a 1 megabit connection at this point. You can reduce that price by paying a 1 year contract, but if you don't have $19.95 a month, you're probably not going to have enough to spend to pay $17.95 over the year.
Yeah, right. Oh, so, well, that's what I'm. I think that's what we're all concerned about. All right. First, Chris, and then why don't we go then to Eric and tell us about how they're dealing with their systems? Yeah.
Right. I think community technology centers are a step. I do have some fears that we can't limit ourselves to that. I wouldn't accuse anyone of doing that, but I want to make it very clear that we need to get everyone connected in their homes. A person, especially a single parent, rounding up their children and going to the community technology center when they get off their job, it's a disaster, waiting in line. It's not an ideal solution. And I believe very strongly that the only way to get there is through a publicly owned system, because it gives you more opportunities. You can, once you run that fiber to everyone's home, you can offer subsidized connections if you want to. You don't have to argue with anyone about it. You just say, we're going to subsidize connections for people who want to connect and live below the poverty line. And there's other technologies that are on the horizon, I believe, that are going to make it easier to teach people computer skills in the home and learn how to use it and troubleshoot it in their own homes. Although technology centers will certainly be a key part of that, going being able to go out to neighborhood lessons. And things.
Well, So,
Christopher, is the main barrier for – I mean, I'm sold the idea that municipalities should own it so they don't have to be held hostage by these larger companies. Is the main barrier that the cities or the towns just don't want to put up with the capital investment?
It's very expensive. And I would say that not the municipality should own it necessarily, but that the community should own it. It could
What's
be a co-op,
difference?
It could be a nonprofit, it could be a utility, and it could be the municipality itself. The difference is if the government, the municipality runs it, and a new mayor comes in and says, I don't want to do this anymore, it could be over. Whereas if you have a co-op, which actually serves, you know, at the is more directly accountable, then that's one option. A nonprofit may be specifically working in that area, and you would never expect them to change their mind about how to offer it.
Yeah, this is the thing that gets to me. We keep seeming to not see utilities as a public entity that is required. Profits are always so important. Why can't we get past that? Peter, why can't we get past that with the U.S. Internet? And go ahead, Eric.
Well, I think profits are very important to anyone who's in the business of making profit. It isn't for us to judge individual providers whose business it is to exist that way. The issue here is that communication networks have reached a level of public need as many other kinds of things have done. And we've had electric utilities, and we have models for those electric utilities that are quite oftentimes established as nonprofits or city departments or many other different models. So the same thing is likely to happen with communications. St. Paul has a steam plant that does heating for downtown St. Paul.
Yeah, district energy, right.
And district energy. And yet XL heats my house. So there is no reason to say that you can't have combinations of these things. But ultimately, we're at a point which is transformative. And we not only have to address the infrastructure requirements that actually allow the transformation to take place, but we need to be open to the many, many things that are about to happen. Like Christopher was talking about, you know, the current need for home connections for people who would not normally do so. That partly will be influenced as their children enter an age where the application delivery of their education is more and more done over a communications network, where the things that they access to complete their academic learning is more requirement of a communication network. But there are multiple transformative applications that will be coming forward.
Okay, Peter?
Well, I just wanted to comment a little bit on what Eric's saying in terms that I too think that profit's an important – definitely important, and companies have to have a way to continue on. But I think one of the problems in the U.S. broadband area is that several companies, AT&T, Verizon, and Comcast stand out. They want to continue to make the large profits they're making now by basically controlling our internet access. And also, on top of that, companies like Comcast, especially in Time Warner, want to control the content that's coming into our homes, too. And so they're, in my opinion, blocking us and holding us back from creating these networks. My understanding is on the Iron Range. Chris mentioned the Iron Range, looking at a fiber across the Iron Range. And I'm an Iron Ranger. I grew up up there. And so I have an interest.
You look like one, Peter.
Not sure if that's good or bad,
Andy.
Just
kidding.
My understanding is AT&T has already lobbied to try to block them and saying, well, we really – and you guys can comment on this because I'm not positive. But we do want to come in there eventually. We aren't there yet, but yeah, we do. We do. And often when there's large municipal deployments around the United States, as soon as they finally get permissions and they finally get going and they finally get moving, AT&T or Comcast all of a sudden appears and also tries to wire the places they hadn't wired in the past until they actually had competition for
the dollar. Serve a lawsuit in the case of Monticello, which suddenly was just served and is being told by the phone company that they can't build this network. And that's
based on what?
They claim that the city is not allowed under state law to use revenue bonds to finance the network, and this is just patently absurd. And the idea that this phone company is going to tell the city how it should build the infrastructure that it needs, I think, is crazy talk.
And what about St. Louis Park, which is announced this morning that they have filed a lawsuit against ARINC, is it? Often delayed solar-powered system? What's that about?
Right. St. Louis Park decided to try and turn two good ideas, which is, this wireless network and solar power into one, and it did not work. And so they're suing the vendor because the vendor did not come through on the contract.
Okay.
If I was in St. Paul and I hear that they're commissioned, they're studying for fiber optic, and I have the same concerns that have been raised. I want it open. I don't want to be my city beholden to a corporation. Who do I contact? What do I do at this point if I'm listening in?
Well, I think the best contact is your city council person. If that's a concern of yours, bring it forward
because it's a public issue.
Yeah. It is a public issue.
Absolutely. The city council is a great spot. You can talk to me. Working with other people, we're trying to get groups together to organize and understand why this is really in our interest, because it's something that the community is going to have to work toward and be involved in the decision-making process of. I'm at the New Rules Project, newrules.org. Click on the information button. That's my sector. And you can also contact me by email, christopher@ilsr.org, which is the Institute for Local Self-Reliance.
And we'll be putting we've already got some of these links up online. So, and Peter, All right, so let's finish up this community benefits thing now, because I would think that every city is going to have to get into CBAs of one kind or another if they're going to be working with private corporations.
Well, actually, Andy, the only time you really get into CBAs are when you're making an agreement with someone who is a non-city governed group, right?
Yeah, right.
In the case where the city has some governance relationship to the communications network, those CBAs are unnecessary because they just simply proceed and do it themselves.
Yeah, theoretically.
Yeah. Eric, that's exactly right. But I just wanted to finish up just what the benefits that we did negotiate, because this is sort of a pioneering agreement in terms of the CBA. In addition to the $500,000, there will also be a 5%, a minimum of 5% of net pre-tax income coming from U.S. Internet over the while they have the network here. So that's a continual feed into this fund to hopefully fund digital inclusion projects in the Minneapolis area. There's also a civic garden, walled garden, that has opened up now on the U.S. Internet system with links. So it's a minimal internet connection, but you can get to the city of Minneapolis, public schools. You can get to some sites at the university, the Minneapolis Public Library.
Sort of a portal, what they're calling a portal.
Yes, a civic portal, and it's location-based. There's a lot of details I won't get into
now. It's a little
like
the community commons that you've been talking about too, Eric, right?
Well, actually, it's different. It's a similar term. When wireless folk talk about commons, they talk about what Peter's talking about. When I talk about commons, I'm talking about the entire network that a city puts together.
Got it. Okay. Go ahead, Peter, and finish it up.
And then in support of the community technology centers, there's 100 free accounts that I'm sitting on a group with the city now on how to disperse those. So these will go to probably two community technology centers.
Okay.
And I'll – that's good.
That was Peter Fleck. I'm sorry that we didn't get a chance to just go through all of the processes. But, Peter, where can they find the community benefits agreement and our listeners get a sense of, especially people in Minneapolis, obviously?
If you go to PFHYPER.com, I have the contract, the summary of the contract. I have the original CBAs, everything available right there for download for anyone who'd like it.
Excellent.
Peter is the best source of information on the wireless network in Minneapolis.
Just in Minneapolis.
And Christopher is the good source on fiber optics and the public commons. And Eric, we want to thank you very much. We must leave it there. Our thanks to all of you from the techie world here. It's kind of wonderful.